Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine. If you know me, you know how obsessed I am with live performance. To me, nothing replaces being in a theater and the lights going down and the orchestra starts to play and that first moment of magic. And I know the way I feel about theater, some people feel about sports or opera or dance or comedy or food. And what if there was a place that you could go and find out which live events are going on near you? And then for a discount price, you can get off your couch, put down that clicker, and experience the magic that is live performance. Well, there is a place, goldstar.com. You just go to that website, you type in your city, and every amazing live event will be listed at discount prices. Theater, dance, comedy, film, food, concerts, sports. No more staying home. You are going to go out and build memories and experiences that expand your mind and heart through live performance with GoldStar.com. GoldStar is in 26 cities around the country. So go to GoldStar.com. Get out of your house and build memories that are magic for you and your family. Expand your mind, expand your hearts. Go see live performance by using GoldStar.com.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known back to the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Hey everyone, new episodes of Little Known Facts drop every Monday and you can find them on your favorite podcast provider. Also, if you go to the website, littleknownfactspodcast.com, you'll find behind the scenes photos, videos, and interviews and lots more on the gallery page. And if you are loving these intimate, candid conversations with all the artists who come on the show, please head over to the contributions page. I depend on these donations to continue to bring you these interviews every week. So if you love the show, please donate. Little known fact about my guest today. He got his first Broadway show by going to an open call and leaving it all on the floor. Welcome Jeremy Jordan to the podcast.
A-OK. A-OK.
Hey, everyone. My guest today is Jeremy Jordan, a Tony and Grammy-nominated actor and singer. He is currently starring on Broadway in American Son. Other Broadway credits include Rock of Ages, Bonnie and Clyde, Newsies, and West Side Story. He starred for the past 3 years on the hit TV show Supergirl and was a series regular on Smash. He also has appeared on Law and Order, SVU, and other television programs. On film, he starred in the last 5 years, Joyful Noise, and the film version of Newsies. I am really thrilled to welcome award-winning actor Jeremy Jordan to the podcast.
Why, hello.
Hello. Now, you can choose. You can look at me or you can look at my airbrushed headshot.
Yes.
Whatever. Either way, don't look at my neck on either. That's
fine.
I ask. You can never look at my neck.
Oh, you're fine.
So I had the tremendous privilege of seeing American Son the other night. And it is an incredibly compelling, provocative piece of theater.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
Yeah. And I thought about you, who has done a lot of different kinds of parts, primarily musicals, on stage and on film. And it must be, I think about what it takes to do a musical and what it takes to do a play, and there are muscles involved in both. But does this feel slightly like a vacation in terms of what it does to your body versus being in a musical?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, in terms of like, you know, my physical well-being, although I'm like a little sick right now, but
yes. And I appreciate your being here.
It's fine. Maybe like 4 days ago I would have been like, can we reschedule? But I'm okay now. But no, in terms of my physical and like vocal well-being, yeah, this is cake compared to like doing a really hard singing show. You know, it's a different kind of challenge, you know, because it's this play is like really rooted in truth.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's all of the moment.
Yeah, and it's very like very moment to moment and very much like listening and paying attention to every little tiny flicker of a beat between mm-hmm. you and the other people on stage because it's so exposed. There's nothing to hide behind. There's no like
literally
song
it's
and dance
spare,
to hide behind. Yeah.
And it's a very minimalist set. Like it's beautiful and it lets you know you're in a police station. But it's very it's minimalistic in that way.
Yeah, exactly. But we trust each other really well, so it's more fun, especially when like little hiccups happen and like little, you know, wrenches get thrown in or we have an understudy come on or something like that. It's for me, it's a little more fun than maybe for a couple other people in the show that have more like really heavy emotional
well,
stuff.
Well, Kerry Washington and Stephen Pascal. I mean, it's gut-wrenching. I mean, just to briefly describe it, it's about parents who have the worst thing happen, which is their son doesn't come home one night. He's a teenager, and suddenly the panic sets in, and they do the thing that you can't believe you're doing, which is call the police station.
Yeah,
and
of course.
See, is my son anywhere in your records? And something shows up, and they end up going to the police station, and then you'll see the mm-hmm. play, ladies and gentlemen, and you'll find out what actually happened. But it really is like you really have your. It's hard to breathe during this play. It's a very tightly packed. Is it 90 minutes?
It's just under 90 minutes.
Right. And it's you're really on this ride. And it really is what's remarkable, why Jeremy's part is so remarkable, is that aside from you sort of being representative of a lot of audience members, you also offer comedic relief at times.
Here and there.
Yeah. I mean, everyone, what's remarkable about this play is it's very serious and it's about race relations in America and it may be worldwide in certain ways, but it feels like a, not just because the title is American Son, it does feel like an American story of the day.
It's definitely very, very, it's definitely very American, at least in its very specific subject matter.
Yeah.
Which is, deals with race in America and sort of police and how police handle different races and especially young men of color. And, you know, of course, there are all different races around the world, but this is a very specific American problem, I think.
Yeah. And the terror of being stopped by police if you're a person of color. It's terrifying.
And what's you touched on it for a second, but what's really interesting about the play is there are four characters who are all very different. And who offer very unique perspectives into the same story.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter who you are in the audience, I think you can find one person that feels a lot
like your point of view.
Yeah, and then every character's point of view is challenged.
Mm-hmm.
Even like the righteous mother is challenged. Even and of course the young cop who is sort of accidentally racist or incidentally racist really is of course challenged.
Well, it asks begs the question, what is racist, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean all
it's less about and nobody actually says the word racist in the show. And even the word race isn't even used in the show, I don't think. And it's really just like undertones sort of coming to life. So like when these people are thrust into this very tense situation and high stakes, sort of the things that we don't normally say in real life get said. And I think what's really interesting and exciting to me is that the characters and the audience are forced to listen to things that we generally don't like to hear, you know, talking about race in a very frank and upfront way. Especially, you know, white people, they tend to kind of shut down a little bit on that because they don't want to say the wrong thing or think the wrong thing. And it kind of gives everyone in the audience permission to really examine race in a semi-objective way. I mean, you, of course, will have your own opinions and you'll have very strong opinions, whatever way you do lean. But, you know, you see the perspective from the mother and the father's from the father's eyes. You see the police perspective. You see
an elder policeman, a younger policeman.
Yes,
like
exactly.
You see all generations. Yeah. Also,
you see a white dude and a black woman. Like it's very, they're very sort of four different ends of the spectrum, and then most people sort of fall in between all these. And of course, at the center of it is this biracial son, who kind of represents everybody. And by the end of the play, I think the audience, we all kind of feel like he's our kid. We all take kind of ownership mm-hmm. of him. And so, you know, we are just as invested as the mother is in finding out what happened to this kid. And
well, it feels like a thriller at times, too. I mean, yeah, it really does have you on the edge of your seat.
You were saying it's hard to breathe. I mean, I remember when I first read the play, you know, it was super late at night, and I was just going to sort of read like the first few pages and sort of see how it set up.
How many pages am I in?
I know. And then, yeah, basically, you know, my character.
The things we do. There's
blah,
an app
blah,
for
blah,
that.
My line, blah, blah, my line. But I started reading it, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I like took my first breath, it felt like, after
so
I
hit the
last
page.
So it's on the
page. It's also on the page.
Yeah, it reads exactly the same way as
what I experienced is listening to it.
Yeah, and of course, we, you know.
Were changes made?
Yeah, minor changes were made. You know, really just clarity things. The overall story is exactly as it has been since we first got the script. But of course, you know, we make, you know, changes to, you know, maybe further, you know, enhance the characters, or like maybe certain words are switched around, or, you know, just little things to make it as concise and clear and as natural as possible. But that was really it.
So let me ask you something, because the writer is white. The director mm-hmm. is black.
Uh-huh.
Some of the characters in the cast are white. Some of the characters in the cast are black. When you are starting to rehearse something like this, everything you talked about in terms of how we in the world worry about what to say or how
yeah.
to dialogue about these really tricky things mm-hmm. as a person of color versus a white person, when you're in a rehearsal room, how is it set up that everyone feels safe to ask questions without mm-hmm. feeling self-conscious, to be sensitive but not taking care of yourself as an actor in a play
yeah.
at the same time? How does a director set up a room like
sure.
that?
Well, I mean,
or maybe it was a non-issue for you. I'm just curious.
It wasn't as big of an issue for us, because I think we all understood exactly what the material was intending.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
well, what was the material
while not,
intending?
Well, I don't think the material is political, although I think most of the cast and the crew weren't ever going to have issues on that regard. But I think it's really a humanity thing, and like a morality thing, and a sort of and something that feels a lot more universal than you would imagine. And so as soon as we all sort of got together and realized that we all wanted to tell this exact same story, mm-hmm. and we sort of figured out exactly what the story was, then it all just became in service to, you know, telling the story in the proper way, in the best, like, most efficient, most effective way. And I think we all, you know, everybody in that room had read the script and loved it and sort of, you know, wouldn't have been there otherwise.
Sure, of course.
So, like, that is something that already unified us. Now, we all brought different perspectives to things, and I think that's really healthy. I mean, you know, I had to sort of challenge myself a little bit to sort of bring a new perspective to my character. And it's funny, because Kenny Leon, who is our black director, is sort of gave me a lot of things that I hadn't even considered, you know, that someone, you know, young white officer who, you know, maybe wasn't as woke, as the kids say,
mm-hmm.
You know, would have been bringing to the table. Because I am, you know, I live in New York City, and, you know, I'm a little bit more progressive in my thinking. Like, it takes me a little bit longer to think outside that
right.
that world. You
right.
know? So, I mean, and it's so funny. I mean, one of the things that really struck me was that, you know, we have Kenny, and then we have Eugene, and also Jerome, who's one of our understudies, who are all black men. And we were talking about, you know, our pasts and how, you know, what our different, you know, experiences with police officers were. And me and Steve Pasquale, we'd never been arrested. I mean, we might have had like a speeding ticket or something like that. But, you know, all of these other guys in our show have all had multiple negative experiences with cops about, you know, just for, you know, racial profiling or being pulled over or taken out of the car or pushed to the ground or even taken into custody and not for anything that, you know, anything abnormal that normally would be deserving of that. And that really opened up my eyes a little bit because, you know, and just doing the play did at the same time because, you know, I'm, you know, come from an all white family and
grew up in Texas, right?
At least where I grew up, there weren't a lot of black people. There was a lot of Hispanic people, which is a different sort of story. But this specific story, I just wasn't as keyed in on. And
what about Carrie? What about a woman of color at the center of the room?
Yeah, I
and
mean,
her
she's,
experiences.
She's. I mean, I can't speak for Carrie, but I think that she has. She brings a whole lot to the table. I mean, she's a big advocate for human rights outside of her life as an actor, and she's met so many incredible people and done a lot for women and women of color. That I mean. She had a lot to offer this, and she's a producer, and she's a producer
on the play.
Yeah, and she sent this play to a lot of her colleagues, and asked a lot of them to sort of give input and feedback as to like how they felt and like how we could use this play to do this. And you know, we set up this thing called the Opportunity Agenda. This company called the Opportunity Agenda, which inside all the programs, they create all these talking points.
Yeah, there's like a curriculum, like
yeah.
sort of a wonderful.
So you can like go online, you can like research different, you know, outreach things. You can get involved and try to make some difference if you were affected by the play, and it's really some really great stuff. But for me personally, it's I feel only strengthened my character as a human being.
Isn't that an amazing thing from a job? Like,
I mean,
most
I feel
people's
like,
jobs don't do that. They don't intersect in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I go out and I look at the world in a very different way, you know? Like, I think about my everyday life and think about the things that I think about and try to expand that, you know? Like, oh, you know, maybe I'm not really considering other people's, you know, sensitivities. Mm-hmm. In this specific regard, or if I talk to somebody and I say a certain trigger word, like, you know, how do you navigate that sort of thing? And I think one of the cool things about the play in that regard is that I think it forces us to really reevaluate ourselves, whether we're black, white, Asian, Hispanic, male, female, as a human, and how we interact with people that are different than us, because we tend to have built in, at least societally built in. Is that a word? Societally,
it I is made it now.
Built in, you know, preconceptions of who people are based upon how they look, mm-hmm. just 100%. And even though we might be, you know, a little bit more progressive, or you know, think that we are all
not doing that.
Yeah, we still are in small ways, and it creeps into conversation, and it creeps into conversation into the things we don't say and the things that, you know, we can't talk about, because race is this big issue that we don't really ever address vocally. You know, it's like this sort of underlying thing. And until we can sort of talk it out and just like be open and free and not have to constantly be worrying about saying the wrong thing and constantly be worrying about, you know, this push and pull sort of nature and just speak to each other as human beings, which, you know, we have a long way to go till we get to that place. And I think that this play helps push us in that direction.
So when you're doing a show like this, that you know where it's going. I mean, this isn't a spoiler alert. You know the country we live in, and you know that chances are whatever's happened, it's not fantastic if your son is missing. How do you guys backstage? Is there laughter? Is there a dance party before you go on? Are you all in your separate corners? What's kind of going on before the show starts?
We had considered before, well, you know, in our rehearsals after, I mean, I think this is the thing that Kenny does, but we started doing it too. In our rehearsals after every rehearsal, we'd all get together and kind of stand in a circle, hold hands and say something positive or kind of talk about why we're there and, you know, sort of uplift each other. And we thought about trying to do that before the show, every show, but then we realized, like, specifically Carrie has to really be in a very fragile state at the top of the show. And so what we decided to do is that as soon as the curtain falls, we all huddle together
after
and give each
show.
Other a big hug and just kind of, like, breathe, exhale together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've done it enough at this point. You know, early on, it was really hard to exit out of that energy of the show. But, of course, with anything, repetition... helps
well, you
us.
Can trust it. You can do the show yeah. and live your life.
Yeah, it helps us to remove ourselves a little bit more from it. I mean, I'm a little bit lucky because I sort of am a little bit of the outsider in the sort of emotional story mm-hmm. of the show. And of course, I have moments, but it's easier for me to exit the character. Thankfully, because a lot of people don't like my character.
Do you like him?
I do like him, but... I don't like certain things about him. I wish that I could, like, sit him down, like, 10 years ago
mm-hmm.
and just be like, yo, just be careful. Like, as you get a little bit older and as you go into this, you know, profession
or
whatever you're
it.
Doing.
It's a people profession.
Like, yeah, just, you know, maybe read a few books and, you know, acclimate yourself to a few other cultures. And I think that he's capable of getting there. And in my opinion, by the end of the play... He sort of begins
something.
To realize the consequences of what he has helped put in place.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, at the end of the day, he's like, he's just that one of the, he's like that thing that we all are at one point, no matter what race you are. It's that, you know, sort of accidental racism. And it's tripping on something that you hadn't realized. It's saying something that, you know, that triggers another person that you're completely oblivious to. And then, of course, it does sort of go into actual, like, talking about it out loud and that sort of thing of, like, how am I any different than you and why should I treat you differently? And there's, like, so many arguments that can be made. And, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, I tackle him from a well-meaning standpoint and from a, like, you know, I have my family and I am doing this job for them.
You're actually doing your job correctly. There's nothing that your character is doing in terms
sure.
of, I mean, you're a little by the book.
Yeah.
I want to just say what's really incredible is that I've known you as an actor with one of the most beautiful human voices.
Oh, that's
and,
very kind of you.
So it was exciting just to kind of get to see, I mean, I have kids, so Supergirl has been on in my house, and it's actually a great show.
Yeah, it's
actually
a lot of fun.
A great show, and all the actors are really good
yeah.
on it. So
we got lucky.
You did, and so there are worse TV shows
yeah.
to be on, and I actually love it, but it was... So it's not that I've never seen you act without singing.
Yeah.
But
well, it's a little bit more lighthearted that
yeah.
show. And my character's a goofy kind
yeah.
of comedic guy.
Yeah. But you know, I realized I had seen you in every musical that you had done in New York.
Wow.
And I was a real Josh Safran is an old friend of mine.
Oh, yes.
And I loved Smash very much. And when he came on, that was exciting
yeah.
to me. And I feel like you came on when he came on the show. I
yeah,
may be
brought,
confusing
he
the
brought,
seasons.
He brought
but...
me on season two.
Okay.
Josh did. He
okay.
was the he was a showrunner.
He was the producer
for
at the time.
For season two, yeah.
Yeah. So I wanna know, and I think everyone listening wants to know, when did you realize I sing better than most people?
Oh, jeez. I don't know. I mean, I guess I knew I had a good voice from like when I was, I don't know, 10 or 12 or something.
Did other people sing in your family?
No. I mean, some of my grandma did theater.
But she wasn't
like... My aunt did theater growing up a little bit. But no, I was very reluctant to be a singer. Like, I used to sing in the shower.
Were you a jock?
No, I mean, I played baseball, but, you know, I liked video games. I was just like a normal kid.
Yeah.
And I kind of got... I kind of got pushed into joining a choir when I was like in fifth grade. I mean, I secretly liked singing, but I didn't like to.
So you were a shower singer.
Yeah, but I was like Texas, you know, where like joining choir was not cool. Like, it's so funny, you know, back in the 90s when I was in middle school and stuff like that, early 90s, nobody was out at any schools in Texas. And now it's like, it's totally different. But
it wasn't on your radar.
No. And I mean, and well, it wasn't that. It was like, it was just like, it was not cool to do that. And if, and
it
if
wasn't
you did,
cool to be a boy who's singing in choir.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I didn't want to be labeled as something, you know, that was going to get me bullied.
Mm-hmm.
That was basically the sort of thing. And, you know, the first label that they give you back in the early 90s in Texas was like, oh, dude, you're gay. You're like, you're, you know, and even though I wasn't like, I didn't want that energy in my life. But I eventually sort of gave in, and a few of my friends and I joined at the same time.
Other straight guys.
I don't know, I guess. But we were kids.
Right.
But it wasn't even that. That wasn't really until middle school, high school that became like a more of a fear thing, which I'm so glad it's not any. Well, I'm sure it still is, but I'm glad that it's not as prevalent, at least from people that I talk to growing you know, that are younger from where I grew up.
But by the way, not for nothing, shows like Glee, I mean, the power of television also to kind of mass market an idea that's positive.
Yeah.
Smash. I mean, there were shows that kind of put it into popular culture.
Yeah.
Pitch Perfect is a movie.
Totally.
Like, it's actually cool. And that's when I like TV.
Yeah, no, of course.
That's when I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, of course. And I, you know, once
but
I
we
did,
didn't have that.
Once I did join, I started to get more confidence about it. And I stayed in choir all through middle school and high school, and it was kind of my thing. I was like the choir dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess I did know that I was
were you getting
a good
solos?
Singer. Yeah, I got like the good solos, and once we started doing competition stuff, especially in high school, I would, you know, make it to the top, like made all state a couple years, and I.
And is anyone introducing you to Broadway cast recordings at that time, or is it more pop songs?
No,
or...
I didn't see Broadway didn't come around like to me for a while. When I was in ninth grade, we did our choir concert at the local community theater, which I had done a couple shows growing up because my grandma did like the youth theater program, and it was like fun over
Sweet.
The summer, but like it wasn't anything special to me. And I really didn't know musicals. I mean, I knew of like Les Mis and Cats, but I didn't really know a lot.
And your parents were not playing those albums in your house?
No, they weren't. I mean, and we would go to the theater every once in a while, but it wasn't really in my mind. And I like to go home and like scream to the radio in my room, you know, slam the door and pretend that nobody else was there and just go
like,
shouting.
Who were you? Like, who did you love? What
oh, you know, it was or... the 90s. So I loved all those like 90s alternative pops groups like, you know, Third Eye Blind and Green Day and Nirvana and all that sort of stuff. And then I, you know, we did that concert and somebody at the community theater asked me if I wanted to like do the summer musical because they needed boys that could sing. I was like, okay, I don't have anything else to do.
Yeah.
So I showed up and I did that and it was fun. And then they asked me to be in the ensemble of South Pacific because they needed more dudes. I was like, okay. And then I just kind of started doing, you know, small little ensemble or supporting things at the community theater. Because I didn't really know how to act or even really know how to try to how to act. I would just go on stage and sing and like make faces and go
and was
home.
Anyone giving you like vocal mentoring or are you also just singing?
I mean, my choir teacher was a pretty good teacher. I didn't really get voice lessons though, so it was very sort of raw.
Mm-hmm.
If I wasn't careful, I would lose my voice a lot, especially in high school and like early college before I really got a really good voice teacher.
I love that then you're in Rock of Ages. And like the idea that you can learn how to do that 8 times a week.
Well, I don't know if I quite got that far with that show.
I know you definitely did it at least once.
I did it many times.
Yes.
But no. I was a swing in that show.
Right.
And it's so funny because I really didn't have any business being in that show, but it was one of those things where I went in for an open call.
Literally? Like an equity call?
Yeah, I went in for an equity call because I had an agent at the time, but I don't think that I was really right for any of the roles. Like, there was, like, the little German boy who was, like, cute and, like, silly, but I was like a little more masculine mm-hmm. from that. And then there was like the lead guy who was like a big, heavy rock and roll singer. And like, I wasn't that either, but I was just enough in between that like I could make them both work. And so I went in and tried out for the swing and ended up
getting
the, you know, the original cast as a swing, because I could do those, both of those roles kind of, I could justifiably do both roles. And
we're skipping ahead, but this was your Broadway debut, right?
Yeah.
So that's how you got on Broadway.
Yeah, it was I went to an open call and just said, screw it. I don't think I'm ever going to get this. So, I mean, when I went into that audition, I just like threw everything out the window. Like it was a rock and roll show. So I'm like doing knee slides. I'm air guitaring. I'm like swinging off things in the room. I broke like a chair or a coat rack or something because I was just like going to rock and roll. And they were just like staring at me like, what is this kid doing?
But they got
and it. And I totally lost my voice the next day because I was going, yeah, yeah. And then literally the next day when they called me and said, you got the part, I was like, oh thank you.
I'll tell Jeremy. He's not home right now.
I don't know how I'm going to do this on Broadway, but we'll figure it out.
So wait, so you have an agent. Do they call you directly and then you tell your agent you just got
No.
Cast,
I mean, I had a call back and they called. I mean, guys, when
official.
I went in for my open call, you give them your resume, agent's name's on it. Blah, blah,
okay,
blah.
So got official.
Yeah.
You still had to give that 10% away.
Oh, yeah. I had to give that 10% for show.
Yeah. So you...
Because they negotiated my
sure
equity,
you did.
My equity minimum.
your shared dressing room on the mm-hmm. fifth floor. But listen, that show was fun.
Oh yeah, it was great.
And you got to do it. Wasn't your wife in that show?
She was, but long after I had left.
So you didn't meet during that show?
No. We did kind of meet because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was auditioning before she got it. She was auditioning for like the first replacement, and she was looking at videos online just to sort of get a feel for the show because she was out of town. She was like doing regional theater or something. Mm-hmm. And so she hadn't seen the show. And she was with one of her friends, I think, and saw a video of me doing something stupid from the show. And she's like, who's that?
That's the number. The something stupid number.
I was just like belting some ridiculously high note. She's like, who's this guy? And, that's Jeremy. You know, you should say hello. And she's like, oh, that's stupid. I would. She sent me a message on Facebook under the guise of like, hi, we know so-and-so in common, and like, I'm auditioning for the show. Like,
any tips?
Do you have any advice?
Yeah.
She literally like asked for advice, and I was like, okay.
Yeah. I got advice.
Yeah. And so.
Marry me.
Yeah, right. And so, we like communicated on like Facebook Messenger. This is before I stopped like allowing random people to add me on Facebook because mm-hmm. it got out of hand.
Well, you already had
fans.
A wife. You're not Mormon. You didn't need many wives.
Exactly.
You're good.
Yeah, but so we finally met up, a few months later, kind of blindly. I mean, I'd seen her do Hairspray.
Okay.
And she, had seen...
Her name is Ashley Spencer,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, her name is Ashley Spencer, my beautiful wife.
Just and, so listeners can Google while they listen.
And so, we just like met up and she was wearing like 5-inch heels and towered above me. And I was like,
and she still is.
Yeah. I mean, well, we're about the same size without
when
shoes.
You wear heels.
When I wear heels, I'm so tall.
You're much, much taller.
Way taller.
So that's how you met. And then you started dating.
And we started dating. And that was, I think we literally spent like the first 48 hours we met together and like did not leave each other's sides.
That's so sweet. Is it so fun singing together?
Oh yeah, we do it all the time. I mean, it's just like normal for us though. Like,
but you know, that's not normal for everyone. Like to get to both of you sing like that together, that must be the best.
Yeah, I mean, we what was really fun, because I've done a lot of concerts and stuff, and she will occasionally come and sing a song with me, mm-hmm. and it's always really fun. But it's still like my concert, and she's like the guest. And then this past summer in July, we did a concert together. Here in the city, and it was
as
brilliant.
Partners.
It was
and you
brilliant.
Created it together and kind
yeah,
of
yeah, it was really
it.
Fun, and we can kind of do whatever we wanted, and hopefully we'll get to do it again once things get a little less busy. But it's great singing together. Our dream is sort of is still, and we haven't really been able to do it, is to do a show together, like a real show, but hasn't worked out yet. We'll make it happen eventually.
All right. Well, it's a new year, and we can start with new wishes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to put that out into the universe for you guys.
Yes.
Did you go to college for theater?
I did. I went to Ithaca College.
Which has a theater program.
They certainly do. Yeah, they have a great theater program.
It's you were in it.
One of the best in the country.
Were you in a musical theater program?
I was a musical theater major, yeah.
And did you have street cred right away at that school as a...
No, because I had literally no idea what I was doing.
So you started at ground zero, basically.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was a choir kid,
right?
So I was a choir kid. I was always a good singer, and I had like done some theater at the community theater. I'd literally never played a lead role before.
Okay.
I'd done like the best that I'd ever done was like, oh gosh, maybe like the Dodger in Oliver. That was like the biggest role I'd ever played.
So did you think when you left high school and thought about college, I'm going to be an actor professionally? Or were you...
Yeah, I did actually because...
Why?
I mean, I had to because I joined a musical theater program, but I...
When did it switch to this is my passion and my calling?
Yeah, well, when I was a junior in high school, I did a show called The Fantastics, which is a musical.
Does it still run here? I feel like it ran for 100 years.
It just closed, actually.
I just missed it.
They just closed. It was
after
at the Snapple
100
Theater.
Years.
Because it was one of my first auditions when I got to the city, actually. I didn't get it. But it's a musical, but there's one character in it called The Mute who doesn't sing or speak. Mm. And they decided to cast older with that show when I was a junior. And so...
Isn't it kids?
Yeah, they're like young kids and their parents, but they just did an older cast.
They wanted some distance.
Yeah, they just wanted like people that could actually act it, and I guess they didn't have the kids down in South Texas to do it at the community theater. So the director liked me, so he cast me as the mute, and I was like, okay, whatever. But what it did was for the first time kind of forced me to listen and not to just like stand there and rely on my voice and like emote and just be that like croony singer dude and you know, everything else goes away. It was like, I was forced to like be a part of the action and be a part of the sort of storytelling element of it.
Was that humbling?
It was humbling, but it was also really, really exciting to me when I realized how incredible it is to sort of shed your own skin and become somebody else.
So you had awareness at a young age, like what you're describing at 15 or 16,
youth
could think in those terms. Like, you could think artistically.
Yeah, well, I don't think that I would have ever made this choice about my career otherwise. I might have gone into a music career, but I most likely would not have gone into any sort of arts career because I was a smart kid. I wanted to get, like, a computer degree or engineering or science or something. Mm-hmm. And then one of the guys in the show, the lead guy, was an older guy, had sort of said... And he was from, you know, upstate New York. He's from the New York area. He wanted to, you know, do this as a living, and he kind of never did it.
It didn't happen.
And he just didn't try it. Mm. But he was good, and he was like, I think that you, and I've been around the block a few times, and I think that you actually have what it takes if this is what you want to do. I was like, really? And so, I knew I was a good enough singer, at least I thought I was, and he kind of got me... sort of started. He gave me a bunch of monologues. He gave me a bunch of songs to add to my book. He set me up with a bunch of colleges that he thought that might have good programs, and I applied to like five or six of them and went out and just tried to rely on my gut instincts, which is all I had at that time. I had no training whatsoever. So when I got to school,
audition for Ithaca?
Oh yeah, I did. And when I got there, I didn't have any clue what I was doing. And I did musical theater only because I like to sing and I like to act, and it seemed natural, not really realizing that musical theater was like a whole thing in itself.
When you say that, what do you mean? What do you see in your head?
Yeah, I mean, musical theater is like a very specific sort of school of thought in somebody's brain. Like, you think, oh, acting in a play or doing musical theater. You think, oh, I'm in a TV show or movie. Oh, I'm in musical theater. Hmm. Like, it's a very specific sort of genre, and the kind of people that it breeds are very specific and tend to be taken less seriously. But at the same time, it's like this beautiful thing of like expressing yourself through song and this beautiful medium that is, I think, incredibly underappreciated. And I just as a kid growing up in South Texas, like, it's just singing and acting, right?
Right.
It's like doing both, and right. like they come together, and it's great. But no, it's like this whole.
So when you're in college,
world.
Do you
whole...
start being educated about Sondheim and James Lapine and yeah. Jason? Like you start learning who these people are, who the
yeah.
gods are.
Oh yeah, in... I mean, I just delved into all the albums. I mean, I got as many as I could, and I would, you know, pirate them from the library, and I would listen to my friends, and I would just try to like immerse myself and understand, you know, style and different artists and characters and how other people did it
right.
ahead of me. I mean, that's what a lot of it is, which is so funny because kids will always say, like, you know, listening to your albums and stuff is like helps me get this, or like, oh, when I prepare for this role, I listen to you do it, and I was like, oh, I did that too. Weird.
Yeah.
Even
and
though
now
I
I'm
even
that.
Though like now I wouldn't do that. Like now I'm at the point where if I was gonna do something that somebody else did, I would not even listen to 1 second of it.
Right.
Because
you
I
don't
wanna
be influenced by that. But you had to, if you were in college in the '90s, like the show the last 5 years for me was and remains one of my favorite musicals.
Oh yeah.
And it changed what a lot of musicals, I say this, changed what musical theater yeah. meant to me. But that one was like a show I think The King and I is gorgeous. I don't imagine myself in that show.
Yeah.
I can escape my life with that show.
Yeah, exactly.
But Jason Robert Brown's score and all of that, I was like, oh, I could live in that show.
Yeah.
I know Jamie and I'm that, like, I get it.
Yeah.
And so I would imagine you were listening to that just the way the years chronologically worked,
yeah,
you had
yeah.
to be aware of that show, even
yeah,
if you
well,
didn't
like,
see
it, came
it
out,
in
it
New
came
York.
Out, it came out right before I went to college.
Right,
and
so
like
you didn't
the, or
see
like
it.
2001 or something like that. I never saw it, but everybody knew it.
Yeah.
In fact, it was like...
And
it was
you
the
listened
big,
to it.
It was the big thing when I was in college, and it was like... And it was hard. Like, it wasn't easy material. And so, like, it sort of became that sort of standard... That like you would judge you and yourself and your peers by, like, if you could really like nail that song from the last 5 years
in
like
class?
Just as a general like rule of thumb, like
right.
if you could really nail a song from the last 5 years, like you were ready, like
you could go to New York.
Yeah, you could go to New York. You could yeah. like it was like
did you?
It was like our Sondheim almost.
Did you master it and then go to New York and get
I
Rock
certainly
of Ages.
Tried. I certainly tried, and I certainly had the whole thing memorized, which is so funny. When I finally auditioned for it for the movie, I mean, I was like, "What song do you want me to do? Like, I'll do it right now. I'll do Kathy's song."
I was gonna say,
like,
I could
"What do you
that
need?
Too.
I got yeah. it. I got it."
And you got it.
I so did get it.
When was that movie? Post.
That was post every other Broadway show I've done. Except for American Son. The last Broadway show I did was 2012, which was Newsies.
And do you get recognized for that all the time? Is that the thing
yeah,
that
Newsies
follows
was
you
like,
around?
Newsies was the big one.
Like if you went
me.
To Broadway Con.
Yeah.
That
Newsies
would be...
was the big one. I mean, people like Bonnie and Clyde too, and it's become like a little bit of a cult
yeah.
thing. But I mean, Newsies is what put me sort of on the map with theater community.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I owe a lot of my sort of success to that, you know,
that moment
sort of, you know, pushing me forward into other things. Like I got smashed right out of Newsies.
You got nominated for a Tony.
I did.
So
that's cool.
You were not a kid. I've had many boys from Texas sit in the chair you're in. John Benjamin Hickey and
there's
Michael Urie
boys.
And yeah. Like wonderful, wonderful performers who did grow up watching the Tonys. So when they were then a part of the Tonys, not only was it an affirmation of the work, it was like their whole life flashed before their eyes. It sounds like you had a sort of different relationship to it.
Yeah, I never watched the Tonys.
Right, like it wasn't your thing. But being nominated is a fantastic feeling.
Totally.
How did you find out?
Just like, you know, in bed.
Mm-hmm.
Because they come out like early as hell in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was just laying there with my wife and we mm-hmm. watched the, you know, we watched the like live stream of it or watched it on New York One or whatever they
yeah.
broadcast it.
Both.
And yeah, I mean, it was exciting.
Did that nomination
it was weird
change things?
Yeah. It was a little weird because, and I hate to say this out loud, but like everybody expected it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I expected it too, but like it was almost like that feeling like if it didn't happen, it'd be really terrible. So it was like a relief when it happened.
Right. Which look at all the people you'd let down.
Which kind of sucks because like it took some of the excitement out of it for me. But
and made you feel pressure.
But then afterwards, like it was exciting, you know. Once all the other stuff started happening,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's tough when you're doing a show though, and like you're nominated because then you like have to wake up early and do all this press, and you're like, I have to do 8 shows a week still.
Yeah.
And this show was not easy. It was a hard show.
Well, there's a lot of movement in Newsies. Andrew Keenan Bolger was here. He's like, thank God I had the crutches. Because I'm not a dancer, being crutchy was the best thing that ever happened to me. But you were dancing.
I lost a lot of weight doing that show.
I know. I need to do Newsies.
I lost a little too much weight at one point. I was like...
But how did you learn how to dance?
Oh, God. See, here's the thing. Right. I didn't, and I'm not a very good dancer, but I can trick people.
Do you do jazz hands up here?
Yeah.
Look up
I'm
here.
Really good at tricking people into thinking that I know what I'm doing.
But
if you really look, you're like, that guy doesn't know what he's doing. He just looks like he does.
The good news is you ended up in the right spot and you didn't trip anyone.
Nope. Yeah.
No one got hurt.
And on the Tonys, for like the first time, probably, and maybe only time ever during the entire run, I nailed that double pirouette perfectly. And of course, they shoved me in the very back for it. But I was fine. And I was like, I can't believe I just did that perfectly.
I did it. I did it perfectly. If nothing else.
Yeah.
Forget winning. I am a winner.
Yes.
I did a double pirouette.
That's right.
So I feel like when you go into Rock of Ages and you're like, I'm just going to do it, balls to the wall and see. Is that an expression?
Totally. Balls to the wall.
That's kind of whatever that means.
I mean, I probably literally went balls to the wall at one point during that audition.
Right.
Like I was jumping around the room.
Right. You're like,
at least balls to the floor.
So you limped. He lived out. They're like, we are going to cast him because he's in pain and it's the right thing to do. There's something about your story and in kind of my deep dive into Jeremy Jordan through the beautiful world of Google. There are many stories, and I'd love if you could tell the last 5 years story of you advocating for yourself and not following the rules. And I want you to tell that story, if you don't mind, about how you sort of tried to do what you could to get that job beyond the audition.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I want to follow up with, where does that come from, that feeling of, like, I've got nothing to lose?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, like we said before, I loved the last 5 years, and I grew up in college with it, and I knew it by heart, and... you know, once the auditions came around and they hadn't found anybody for the male lead, because they already had Anna Kendrick. Mm-hmm. And I know that they looked at like bigger names, and it's a hard sing. It's a hard role to sing. And I think they needed someone that could really do the vocals justice. So they looked to some Broadway guys. And, you know, I had done a season of Smash and it was canceled at that point. So you know, I went in initially and I thought I did pretty good. I think we started out with If I Didn't Believe in You was like the big audition number. Moving Too Fast. That was like the first one.
And are they handling it like you would be auditioning for a Broadway musical, sort of the same vibe, or does it feel like a film?
Yeah, it was a little more film vibe. It was just the director in the room
and
like the casting director and a camera and a guy playing the piano.
Okay.
I know he ran it with me a couple times, and I felt pretty good about it. And then I came back in for a callback.
Do you see other guys there at any of these meetings?
The first one. After that, I didn't see anybody else there.
That's better.
Yeah, it's better, but then you're like, but I still don't have it, so what's
was there someone
going on
in the closet?
There are people.
Yeah.
Well, I know there are people sending in tapes.
Yeah.
Aside from all that, I try to remove myself a little bit from the competition aspect of it, because you got to compete with yourself more than anybody else. Because if you can sort of win that competition, then regardless if you get the role or not, then that's a victory to me. And so I went and did another. I did If I Didn't Believe in You, to like do a little bit more dramatic thing. And I still felt like I did pretty good, but I just didn't feel the energy from the director of being like, this is our guy.
So he's not chatting with you a lot, or he's just
he
more
was,
like...
He was, but like he was just tentative. And I was like, how do I get this? And then I think I had a third audition where we came in and I did like the Shmuel song because he wanted to see if I could do comedy. I was like, can I do comedy? Because I really hadn't done a lot of comedy, at least not like... Not in like the main things that I'd done, like Smash. It wasn't funny. Bonnie and Clyde. I mean, Newsies had comedic elements,
right? But
not, you know, West Side Story's not really funny.
Yeah,
Rock of Ages was funny, but nobody saw me do the funny stuff, really. And so, you know, I needed to sort of get that out, and so I did that, and I thought I felt good about that too. And then it was still like, you know, I got this kind of feedback from my agents. It was just like. They're not sure, you know, there's a couple of the guys in the mix, you know, we're really just going to have to wait this out. And I was like, you know what? Screw
no.
this.
No, no.
So I got the directors, Richard LeGrovene is a great, wonderful guy, directors. He also wrote the sort of adaptation of it. I got his email or something, and I just sat down and I just was like, hey, Richard, it was lovely working with you, like, here and there. I just wanted to, you know... say a few words about
this project. By the way,
listeners,
Jeremy is typing on the table.
Yeah,
he's reenacting.
I just want to say a few words.
Ding.
I wasn't using a typewriter. It was an email.
Ding.
I wanted to say a few words about the project and just like what I feel I could bring to it and how much this means to me and take it or leave it. But I do really feel like I could be great in this role and we could really make something beautiful together, and here are my ideas for what we could do for the show. And so I not only pleaded my case, but I like sort of, I mean, I just talked to him about the character and about like how beautiful the show could be on film and like different ways that we could sort of work together and like what I could bring to the table that maybe other people couldn't. And like how, you know, trying to come at it from like a creative standpoint,
right.
And not just like I'm the best actor.
Right. No, but like a collaborator.
You know? Yeah, exactly. From a collaborative standpoint. And
had you ever met Anna during the audition process?
No.
And was Jason Robert Brown in the room?
No.
Okay, so they're looking at tape somewhere. You'd never worked
yes.
with them during
yeah,
the
yeah.
audition
no, I only
process.
Met the director and like Telsey.
Right.
And who's the casting director? And then yeah, and I sent it, and he sent me a, you know, a short email back and being like thanking me for my candor and sort of like that's
you're like
very
what
kind
does
of...
that mean?
And then like a couple weeks later on Valentine's Day, I got the call.
He sent you a Valentine.
Yeah, that's... I was on my way because my wife and I were going to a nice dinner, and I had to like park the car like four blocks away, so I dropped her off so she could like get the reservation on time, and I was walking back from the parking garage, and my agent called me and was like. This is it. So I walked in. I was like, I got it.
Were you crying?
No. But I mean, it was exciting.
Was that, of all the wins, like when you think of the yeses, because we, God knows, there are a lot of no's.
That was definitely one of the best yeses for me.
What are the other like best yeses?
Gosh. Well, I mean, I guess my first Broadway gig was a really great yes for me. When I got smashed was a great yes, even though I kind of thought I was going to get it. Actually getting it was really exciting because I love TV and I always wanted to be on TV and you know, and my mom was there when I got it, which was kind of cute.
She was visiting?
Yeah, she was visiting at the moment.
Was she in the, she didn't go
on the
audition?
No, it's funny. My wife and I were actually like signing a lease for a new apartment that we could barely afford. We're like, oh God, what are we doing? And they called me while I was in the leasing office. I was like, sign the check. I'm making that TV money. And
we're
going
to give you 4 months up front.
And my mom was at home, you know, waiting for us to come back. And I like walked in. I walked in and I said, hey, mom, guess what? She said, what? I said, let me be your star. And she's like, oh, my God, you got it. It was the cheesiest thing I've ever done in my entire life. But she loved it. So,
Do you think that Bombshell will become a Broadway musical?
No.
Okay. Well, then we're done.
It's too hard.
Is it?
Who's going to do all every song?
It's already been
is
done.
Every song is a massive production number and vocally insane. I don't know. I wouldn't want any girl to like have to do 10 of those like
it's
numbers.
It's too much.
It's too much. which is why, you know, when we did the concert of it, they split it between two girls.
Right, because it was too much.
Yeah, just like the show. I don't think it's ever going to happen, but I don't know. But that, I don't. Here's the other thing is like, I wasn't really a part of all that stuff. So my only opinion is like, as an outsider, being like, I think that's like
not a good idea.
No, I don't think it's not a good idea.
No. I mean, vocally for the person.
Oh, yeah. It would be super hard. I wouldn't want to do that as a girl. I'd be like, nope, that's too much.
Yeah. Do you know? Well, they could split it. I think, look, True West, they do, you know, they
you know, they're doing like
forth.
The Cher show that way, and they did the summer thing, and
Little Marilyn, Medium Marilyn, and Big Marilyn.
I don't know if you say it that way.
Do you? Yeah, I just spent my years. We had like 7 parties, and at the last minute, I was like, I don't want to go anywhere. And we ended up watching this amazing Arthur Miller documentary.
Mm.
And I highly recommend it. It's okay. Like Mike Nichols and all these amazing people are interviewed about him. But they just go into that chapter of Marilyn and the Misfits and that whole history. And it's incredible.
Yeah.
Just as an aside, that was my New Year's.
Got you.
but I want you to hear the part where we were invited to a lot of parties and I decided not to do that.
Yes.
I hope that was clear. Do you know what's next?
Well, it's a mixed bag. Nothing super huge, really. Once the show's over, I'm going back to do a few episodes of Supergirl.
My kids will be really happy.
Yeah.
Your bank account will be happy.
My bank account will be happy.
Yeah.
Well, my wife and I are building a house, so
no bank account.
We're spending all our money on the house, so I need a little bit extra. And there might be a sneaky film opportunity in there that I can't really say anything to. And other than that, you know, I'm doing concerts like I do, and I'm working on this this album that I've been trying to make forever.
You buried the lead, my friend.
Yeah.
That's thrilling.
I like to do that.
And is that original songs that you've written?
Yeah, I mean, I've been writing stuff since I was like in high school. Now that stuff is terrible, and I still have the lyrics to prove it. But as I got a little bit older, like post college, I started writing again. And, you know, a little bit older, a little bit wiser. And so through the years, I just kind of, as a hobby, you know, maybe 2 or 3 songs a year just kind of come out and in my spare time, I'll work on them. And so I have this like kind of little folder of songs that I've always wanted to do something with. And I was either too scared to put myself out there or too busy or like didn't know the right people. And once I got through with like, you know, once I started getting a little bit more clout and people starting to know who I was and I had a little bit more time on my hands, I started to work it out and I was in doing Supergirl and originally when I was in LA and I met up with a few producers and a few people and buddy of mine and I put together like a 4-song demo and started shopping it out to people. And so we're in the process of recording some stuff, and it's a slow process because, you know, I'm doing 8 shows a week.
Yeah.
But once that's over, although I'm sure I'll be busy with something else, so it's a little bit of a slower process.
Are you in your dressing room working on that sometimes when you're off stage?
Sometimes. But the thing is, like, most of the stuff that I have for this first album, I say first album because I plan to do more, hopefully, because, and I've always wanted, people have always like, why don't you have an album? I was like, because I've always wanted my first thing to be, like, not musical.
Right.
Theater related. Because I do have, like, a pop sort of alternate rock sensibility singer songwriter thing, and I really love exploring that side of me. It's like a different, it's like outside of this world of theater and all that sort of stuff, but while still being influenced by, you can't help being influenced, storytelling elements sort of come into place and that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it's all sort of done on my end, what I need help with, and I've realized that it's okay to ask people to help you. And is, you know, putting it together musically and, you know, producing it and making it sound perfect and all that stuff. So that's kind of the stage we're in right now. And
that's exciting.
Yeah, we've got a few recorded and hopefully get a few more and then, you know, and then release it. I mean, it's more of a passion project. I'm not like looking to be like a big star. You know, if people like it, great. If not, whatever.
Do you have a name for it? Is there a title for the album?
No, I have ideas.
We can do like a giveaway. People can write them in and they'll get this signed playbill by Jeremy Jordan.
No, I'm not going to let other people decide my album title.
You don't think?
No,
It's too personal.
It's very personal. But yeah, hopefully we'll
still do a giveaway, but we won't choose your title,
I think.
What we're saying. But we'll totally do the giveaway.
Like, you give me in, like, if you want to, like, donate money to the album, I'll put your name in as special thanks.
Totally. So we are starting the Kickstarter today,
yes.
Right now, for Jeremy Jordan's album. It's so funny because Be More Chill is going to Broadway. Joe Iconis wrote Broadway Here I Come,
song
that you are all over the YouTube singing.
Yeah, that was my first episode of Smash. I was singing that song. Which, funny enough, like, he didn't write for that at all. I mean, it was just a song that he had written for his concerts. And oddly enough, Krista sang it originally, I think. Maybe she was one of the first people to sing it. Krista Rodriguez, who was in Smash with me. But I sang the song.
She's fantastic too, but it's your song.
I love her. But yeah, it's become that song from Smash, you know, which is exciting. And I do it all the time.
Yeah, so. It's a beautiful anthem.
But it was it's funny. It's anthemic, but it's also like fairly sad at the same time, if you really think about
it. Well, if you listen to the lyrics.
Well, it's just like one of those things that, like, it's like sort of diving into this world, this sort of terrifying world of art and putting yourself out there and judgment and huge percentage of failure is akin to, like, throwing yourself off the building. You know, sometimes, you know, it's thrilling, but it's also terrifying at the same time.
It just lands in your voice really beautifully.
Hmm.
It just felt like about dreaming. Like, what do you do
with
your dreams? And they crash and burn, or you rise up to some unforeseeable height that you could never have imagined. Yeah. It's even better than what you imagined.
I think if some of the bigwigs at NBC had really listened to the lyrics, they wouldn't have let it be on film. They just thought it was like, we're going to Broadway.
It's a pretty musical. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then we're actually killing ourselves. Yeah. Well, Jeremy, I am so happy that you came today. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
I know what it is to do 8 shows a week, and this was a 9th. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Until next time. Thank you so much for listening. Do you know there are over 120 episodes of Little Known Facts with Alana Levine at this point? So if you love this one, but you're a new listener, go back to the beginning and catch up. I promise you, every episode will shed a light on an artist that inspires you in a whole new way. It is such a pleasure to make this podcast for you, and I hope if you love listening as much as I love making it, that you'll head over to my website, littleknownfactspodcast.com. There's a donation page, and truly, any donation, large or small, makes such a huge impact on my being able to make over 100 more episodes for you guys. So I really, really appreciate it. I record this podcast at the Hangar Studios in New York City. If you ever are interested in making your own podcast or any kind of recording, go to thehangarstudios.com and get more information on how they make the magic happen. Thanks for listening.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.